Thank you for joining me on the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, AZ. I find the research and resources and then provide the fire service with the so what, now what, to ensure the health and well-being of every member of our profession. Together, let's thrive. Hello, everyone. It is AZ back here with yet another episode of the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. And today, I am joined by my friend, Lieutenant Andy Scott, for episode 12. Andy, say hello to the people.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you so much for your time today, Andy. And just so you know, listeners, we are recording in person at the Plainfield Fire Protection District. So if you hear some tones going off or some vehicles starting up, that is why. So Andy and I have been friends for about 4 years now, I believe. And we met because I recognized a shortcoming in myself. I purchased the program Train Heroic, which is a program delivery app, and I was so excited about it, and I got a great deal on it because I went to Summer Strong, and then I got home, and I had no idea how to use it. And so I called the company. I said, listen, is there someone local that I can meet up with who can tell me about this program, help me with this program? And they said, yeah, there's this guy, Andy Scott, at Plainfield. And so I reached out. Andy and I met at Starbucks, and we have been friends ever since. And I am so grateful for him. So as with every episode, Andy, I'm going to start with the lightning round questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're ready. Okay. Andy, who are you?
So like you said, I am a lieutenant at the Plainfield Fire Protection District. I've been here for, God, now you're going to make me do some math. I will have been here for 20 years, in November.
So wow.
Coming up. Yeah. So that was my time. I started here as a paid on call EMT. And then I've been full time for 7 years. So that's my kind of my career line. I am married with two awesome kids. My wife's name is Sarah. We've been married. We actually just celebrated our 17th year anniversary. So we got married and I got hired all at the same time.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My daughter is 17. I guess we had our daughter too. So I guess it's like the milestone thing, huh?
Absolutely.
My son, he's going to be 16 here next month. So he's going to be driving. He drives me nuts. but yeah, just great family. They definitely keep Sarah and I very, very busy. So my daughter's getting ready to go off to college here next year. She graduates this year. She's going to be graduating from Plainfield North High School.
Outstanding.
Go Tigers. She's a member of the marching band, and I couldn't be more proud of her and her musical talent and ability. So she's really, I don't know where she got it from because Sarah and I are not musically inclined at all, but she has done awesome. So, and then my son, Drew, plays baseball, and he is an amazing baseball player, athlete, just absolutely loves the game, way better than I ever was. I got to give him credit because he stuck with it. I didn't. I chose a different path, playing ice hockey, but he absolutely loves baseball, and I couldn't be more proud of him as well. So there, that's it. That's me. That's my whole life wrapped up with between my wife and two kids and my awesome job.
I have a side question about art, Andy. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I noticed about you when I met you was your kick-ass tattoo on your arm, which I believe you told me, was that your daughter that drew the artwork or your son or both?
Both of them.
Both of them.
So it was an idea I had. I was a big, I will still like to say that I'm a big punk rocker, but back in the day, I was a big fan. I still am a big fan of NoFX, the band. And Fat Mike, the lead singer and bass player for the band, had like this stick figure drawn on his arm, a tattoo. And I don't know if it was one of his kids' drawings or not, but I saw that and I was like, oh, that'd be cool to have my kids do something like that one day. So that's where I got the idea from. And when they were, I believe they were 6 and 8, is when they drew these little drawings. And I found just the right tattoo artist, and she did an awesome job of putting them on my forearm. So
I think we're going to try to figure out, we haven't got your podcast artwork done yet, but I think we're going to try to figure out how to bring your sleeve into it.
Yeah.
More to come.
Yeah.
All right, Andy, what sets your soul on fire?
There's really two things. the first thing is I am a big fan of just having experiences and adventures. And that's something that me and my wife, we always, you know, we don't like, we love to travel. We don't like going to the same place twice. And it's just the adventure and the experience that for the both of us that just kind of really keeps us going and keeps our relationship in a good spot. We have all kinds of stories we get to tell. And ultimately for me, that's the biggest thing is to be able to tell the story of, you know, my experiences and the cool things that I've had the opportunity to do. And then professionally, really what has always driven me is to be able to do something new and bring back something for everybody here at the fire district. I remember when I was going through the hiring process, I was lucky enough to be one of the first 9 full-time firefighters that we hired. And we didn't have a board of fire commissioners at the time when we first started hiring. So my interview was with 2 fire chiefs, the HR lady, and I think 1 or 2 trustees on the board. And I remember telling them, they asked the question, the only question I remember, why do you want to work here and what do you like about Plainfield? And I said, well, it's new. We're just starting this full-time adventure and building this department and turning it into a career department. And I want to be part of that. And I want to bring something and do something new to the Plainfield Fire District. And we had a great group of guys that we hired between 2006 and 2010. We really grew rapidly then. But I saw an opportunity that nobody was really focusing on health and safety or health and wellness. And that's kind of what kind of drove me to that, because it was something that nobody was working on, nobody was doing. So I really just kind of, as my wife would say, became obsessed with it. and I just ran with it. So to be, and it turned into, you know, started off as fitness, I think, which is a common practice for everybody to, that's where everybody seems to start. And I really got into the whole wellness aspect of everything. And it turned into of how can I help, you know, my brothers and sisters on the fire district and make their lives better.
Wow. I love that. That is amazing. And so you sort of answered it already, but tell me how do you see that you're changing the world?
Well, I don't know if I really have any original ideas myself. I think a lot of this stuff is just other people's ideas that I really just read about and then bring back to the fire district. And that's really the one thing that I really try to, you know, read all the new breaking ideas and research that's out there and try to bring it back here so that way we can be healthier and happier and have better careers, longer careers, healthier careers, with the sole purpose of just enjoying our careers, having fun. I know as a company officer, that's the one thing I always tell my crew. We get new assignments annually or every year. And I always start the year off when I give my expectation talk, you know, our goal is to, you know, do our job, but we also want to have fun doing it. I want you to have fun throughout this year and be able to remember it and enjoy it. And ultimately, that's what I want everybody to do for their entire career. Like, this is a great career. We'll have so many stories when we finally retire, and I want them to be good stories, and I want them to enjoy their career, enjoy their life, and just have fun however long it lasts, 20, 30 years. So that's kind of just have fun.
That sounds a lot to me like thriving.
Yes.
Instead of surviving. That's one of my themes. I like that a lot, Andy. Well, in episode 3, I spoke with my coworker, Luke Peterson, who is the fitness coordinator at my department. And then before you and I hopped on this morning, I asked you what your official title is here at Plainfield. And you told me health and wellness coordinator. And so tell me, what was that path to becoming the health and wellness coordinator? What did it start out looking like? And what does it look like today?
The one thing that I've felt that I've always been very good at when designing our health and wellness program is being able to recognize opportunity. This didn't come overnight. It wasn't like some grand idea that I had and woke up and said, hey, chief, we should do this, this, and this. It kind of came out of, you know, I saw a problem somewhere, or not necessarily even a problem, just an opportunity that I could take hold of and, you know, make it better. And that started back in like 2010. So our program's been going on for a long, it hasn't been going on for a long time. The idea started back in about 2010. And it came with our first contract negotiation, and we contract with a local hospital to do our physicals and everything. That was the one thing that really kind of benefited us, is the district started off on the right foot. They went and followed NFPA 1582 and 1583 with the help of this hospital kind of pushing them in that direction. But one of the things that the hospital was doing was they wanted to do the fitness assessment portion. And I went through it when I first got hired, and I wasn't a big fan of it. I didn't see how that necessarily related to us as firefighters. They were doing, like, you know, estimating our one rep squat and chest press, but they were doing it on a machine with 10 reps. And I came out of that fitness assessment feeling like a beast, because at the time I was like 160 pounds. I was a runner. I didn't really lift weights, but my estimated like max squat was like over 500 pounds. And my chest press was like 425. I was like, yes. But in reality, I'd probably been lucky to put up 225 once at that time. So I went to the district or the chiefs, and I said, hey, listen, you know, there's this program through the IFF, the Peer Fitness Trainer Program, and it's more designed for firefighters. And, you know, we could do it. Like, it'd be minimal equipment we'd have to buy. You'd just send myself and a couple other guys, and we could just do it in-house. And they were on board for that. So we got through the program, or we attempted to get through the program, and then bought the equipment and everything. But the problem we had next was they never made time for us to do any of it. So it was a time issue. So fast forward a few years later, we have a new administration, or I shouldn't say administration. We have a new fire chief, and we're in negotiations again. And I said, you know, let's take this fitness assessment stuff out of our contract, because we're not doing it. Like, what's the purpose of it? And he's like, well, no, we're not doing that. Let's start doing it. So then I said, okay, well, here's the next steps that we need to do. And then we finally got the time to do it. And I believe it was 2015. We started doing annual fitness assessments. Everybody comes in, does the assessments, non-punitive. There were some issues with the union, obviously, that always seems to be a hang up. But the one thing I think that benefited us is I was on the executive board at the time. So I was able to pitch it to the union and say, hey, listen, I'm on the executive board. I'm heading up this thing. I'll keep all of the records, and we'll keep it on the union computer that you guys have purchased for us. So there is absolutely no way that administration will ever see any of, you know, your assessment data. So not only is it written in the CBA that it's non-punitive, it can't be used against you, but we're not even going to give them the opportunity, because it's going to be on this separate union computer. So once that was explained to everybody, then we had major support for it. So that was the first step of getting everything going. And at the time, we also had the fire chief allowed us time to come in. And once we got all the peer fitness trained, we were able to come in and do, I think it was like 6 weeks of workouts Monday through Friday with everybody. It was awesome. It was kind of this is what we learned. This is how we do a muscular strength workout, a muscular endurance workout, a cardiovascular workout. And it was all in circuits, but we did 6 weeks of that. And that really got us off on the right foot and really got everybody into, you know, using their time to work out once we were done. It really kind of helped build those good habits and really got everybody into a groove. So after that was said and done, we got the fitness thing down. And then I personally started looking into the mental health aspect of things, because I was always looking for the new thing. What can we keep building on? I'm a big believer in you can never take your foot off the gas. You always got to keep pushing forward. So I went and did the Illinois Firefighter Peer Support Program, did that, started bringing in mental health. We also have a couple different peer supporters here other than myself. So we don't have an official peer support program. Later on, myself and another guy went and did the precision nutrition course. So we were able to add nutrition coaching to our program. And then most recently, and again, this is more because of opportunity, we had, last year was a really bad year for injuries for us. We had a lot of shoulder injuries. It was quite expensive. So we ended up going to the Chiefs and we said, hey, listen, we could start this movement initiative. And what we would like to do is take 15 minutes in the morning minimum and do some movement exercises first thing in the morning to get going. The Chiefs were on board for it 100%. So once we got them sold on that, I said, well, if we really want to make sure that we build good habits and this becomes a practice that we do every day, not just, you know, we're going to do it for now because we're told to, and then eventually we'll stop doing it, which happens a lot. I said, why don't we push all of our training back until 9 o'clock? So that way, once guys get in there, they do their rig checks, they do their little bit of movement and their mobility in the morning, and then they go work out right away. And then we can start our day with drills and fire inspections and whatever else we have on the agenda. And that really helped guys get into the movement, and they really decided that they were going to, you know, start doing stuff in the morning. And we've had a lot of good success stories come out of it. There's a lot of guys that most of them all have dropped a significant amount of weight in the past year. You know, I think one guy's down like 50 pounds at this point.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's just doing, you know, simple movement stuff in the morning, just kind of waking the body up, getting, you know, your range of motion back under control. And then they get on the treadmill and, you know, just walk for an hour or, you know, our ellipticals or whatever they decide to do. I've got another couple guys that, you know, they had some back issues earlier in the year, and then they started doing this and they're like, I can't believe how good I feel just by focusing on some hip mobility in the morning. And then two, we're trying to really build good movement patterns in the shoulders because we've had numerous shoulder injuries over the past couple of years. So we've had our fair share of success stories, and the guys and girls, they just seem to like it. It's nice first thing in the morning, get the body woken up, get moving in the right direction, and, you know, just has really helped everybody so far. So that's kind of where we're at. So
I have so many questions, but okay. First, I'm going to try to keep them organized. You mentioned keeping your foot on the gas, which I think is really important because in the fire service, we have this bad habit of, well, we literally put out fires for a living, see a fire, put it out, move on to the next thing. And so once that sort of shoulder injury issue drops off the radar because you're helping mitigate those by your morning movement, it's kind of hard to keep the foot on the gas. And I'm really glad to see that your administration is doing that because it's also, even if you are that person that's feeling better from the back discomfort or whatever that they were having, it's hard to keep your own foot on the gas when you're not seeing the investment in time. So I guess my question is, how do you communicate with your administration the value of keeping your foot on the gas, since that's a common misstep that we make?
So one of the things that I've always been a big fan of is constant communication, like whether it's communicating with the fire chiefs or even communicating when this program started. Like I told all the fire chief, the battalion chiefs and even the company officers, you know, we need to continually talk about this. Like this isn't something we're going to talk about today because this is the introduction training and, you know, this is what's going to happen over the next years. But we need to continue talking about it on a monthly basis. And one thing that I've done is first thing I did was I asked all the company officers is to record this in our training program. So I know who's doing it and what time they're doing it. And time really isn't a big deal with me. Like whether that some guys like working out in the afternoon and that's just the way it is. If they want to do the movement stuff in the afternoon, whatever, more power to them. I'm more worried about the consistency of them doing it, not necessarily when they do it. So we have it tracked in our training program. So every month I get an email that says how many completions that we have. Now, over the summer, which I expected, that did drop off just because we're busier. We're outside doing more physical training. We've got more public events that we have to do, and it has been very taxing on us and stressful. So it has fallen off. I'd like to believe that it's just people being lazy and not recording it in the training program, which very well could be. There's really no way for me to 100% track it. But so far, our injuries really haven't gone up too much compared to previous years. But the cost of the injury has definitely gone down. So even though we are still on track with the same number of injuries, the cost for injury and the time loss is significantly reduced. So that tells me that, you know, people are doing it. And their just recovery is a lot quicker. So, or they're not getting as severely injured as they once were. But going back to communicating with the fire chiefs is I also, they also get that email. So every month they know who's completing it, how many people are completing it. I break it down, you know, into percentages. So like I'm, you know, if they do it 50% of the time, that makes me happy. The people that do it 70% of the time, you know, big thumbs up for me, just with our days off. If you're doing it 70% of the time, I can probably figure that you're doing it every day. So the fire chiefs see those, and I constantly pop in once a month and, you know, tell them how it is. I also sit on the safety committee. So, you know, we have quarterly meetings with that, and every month they want a report. So I always, you know, give them a report as well, which again gets, you know, back to the fire chiefs. So they're constantly getting fed information from me of what is happening, what, you know, and what isn't happening. I've been very upfront with them on, you know, where I think the pitfalls are with leadership on certain shifts and who's promoting it and who's not promoting it. So there is a constant communication in all directions.
Honest and constant communication. That's a very good message for all of us to take home. And then I heard you say you started out with your physicals at the hospital, then you layered on the fitness testing and training, then you layered on the mental health, then you layered on the nutrition. So it's these layers. But it brings to mind many firefighters are nervous about testing in general. And we operate on a spectrum. For example, Indianapolis Fire Department has had fit for duty testing for a really long time, whereas there are departments out there that aren't even offering physicals to their members, or when they try to offer physicals, the members get very nervous about the physicals. At my own department, we've had physicals at least for 20 years, and it's something that we actually look forward to. It has caught many, many a heart issue, many a problem. And so basically, as firefighters, there's the two things we hate, things staying the same and change. That's normal. But what would you say to those firefighters that are maybe apprehensive about wherever they are on the spectrum? They're apprehensive about the medical physicals, or they're apprehensive about the fitness testing, or even if they're apprehensive about the fit for duty, what would you say to those firefighters to help sort of ease their minds?
The big thing that they got to remember is especially with the physical portion, the way our company does it, that we contract with, like our fire chiefs and administration don't get any results for anything. It's literally a phone call that says they're fit for duty or they're not fit for duty. And then if they're not fit for duty, it's up to that individual to go to their own primary physician to get whatever problems fixed. I mean, honestly, the ones that have happened here in the past, it's always cardiovascular, which is
typical,
our primary problem, right, in the fire service. But that's what it is. It's like there's no information being shared with them, and any upstanding company is going to, you know, do that. As far as the fitness and everything goes, you know, if you have a union that you at your department that you can work with, have them take it over. Do exactly what we did, and just have, if their union purchases union computers out of, you know, for their executive board members, see if you can get them to get one for whoever the fitness person is, and let them keep all the records. There's nothing. I don't report back anything to the chiefs about any of our fitness assessments. And I don't even go track guys down. I probably should, but I don't. I don't track guys down that are on vacation when we do them. You know, I always send out an email, hey, if you missed it, contact a peer fitness trainer to make it up. I probably can count on one hand how many times somebody's reached out and said, hey, I didn't get my fitness assessment done this year. But, you know, whatever. It's on them. It's for them anyway. It's not for me to keep track of anything. I mean, sure, I do use the numbers when I look at injury statistics for the year to say, you know, hey, this is kind of where we're at. You know, we do a push-pull assessment. So I can say, you know, hey, if we had shoulder injuries, you know, the upper body push-pull was a little lackluster. So that's probably a good indication why we have, you know, shoulder injuries. You know, but outside of that, you know, nobody's seeing anything. My chiefs have been great. They've never asked me a question about anything. I've never really had any issues. And to be honest with you, if it's probably easier to go and look at how somebody performs in a drill versus their fitness anyway. If they have poor fitness, then if they're out doing, you know, pulling hose or doing a live burn and they've got to pull 2.5 up, you know, 2, 3, 4 flights of stairs, you're going to probably see it there and not just in the fitness assessment. And it's probably easier for the training officer to be like, hey guy, you know, we got to talk about something because you can't pull this 2.5 up these flights of stairs, you know, or whatever it may be. So in my opinion, it's easier to go that direction anyway than it is to even go, you know, down the road of, well, this person can't do X amount of pushups or, you know, whatever you're using for your fitness assessments.
And that's really a great idea. Keep it non-confrontational, non-adversarial, and then just remembering that it's for the benefit of the employee and it's a service, so to speak, that the employer is providing. So that's a great way to think about it. Mm-hmm. So Andy, the big $1 million question everyone wants to know is, we don't have any money. We don't have any budget. How do we do this? Where do we get the money? So how do you here in Plainfield finance the program?
So for anybody that knows Plainfield, we're very lucky with what we have. We do very well for ourselves. However, I don't typically ask for a whole lot. As far as when we started and we went to the peer fitness program through the IFF, we actually used our foreign fire tax money for that. We could have used our, we have a training budget, each individual firefighter here. We could have used that. But some of the guys that were on the, that wanted to go hit were, you know, big into TRT and those classes add up and a bunch of other stuff. But so we used foreign fire tax and they funded our, the tuition costs for that. The district purchases all of our fitness equipment initially. And then once we need to come up with a replacement item or preventative maintenance, I mean, stuff's going to break, that also gets funded through our foreign fire tax board. As far as an annual budget for myself, because we all come back on our off day in order to do everything. So that's one thing that has really benefited us. We don't do anything fitness or health and wellness related on shift. So if I'm coming back to do fitness assessments, it's on my 2 days off. And we fund that through our 7G program. So we're not getting paid our overtime rate or straight time rate. And when I do that every year, you know, I budget out how much we're going to spend. And usually it's only a few days or maybe 2 weeks a year. And I just, you know, put it in my budget and ask for it. And, you know, they've been very good about giving me pretty much anything that I've asked for. When it comes to training you know, we've had you out a couple times to do some classes for us. So, it's just a matter of just asking for it. And if they say no, that doesn't mean, you know, it's not going to happen ever again. I think that's one of the misconceptions that a lot of people take is when the fire chief says no, then that means it's done and over with, where maybe it's done and over with this year because the district's having a poor year financially. But maybe next year they do a little bit better. You know, and maybe next year's the year to ask and to get something up and going. But there's also plenty of grants out there. I know we've used our IPRF grants that we've gotten from our work comp provider to purchase some things. So, I mean, it's you just got to be resourceful, get out there, you know, especially if your department's not financially set to fund it itself, to find the grant programs that are out there. And like I said, foreign fire tax for us has been, you know, a great opportunity to use it. And, you know, the foreign fire tax fund is for the benefit of everybody on the department. And if you're sending people to become, whether it's the IFF peer fitness program or the NSCA tactical facilitator program, you know, those people are there to help everybody in the fitness and strength and conditioning, and or even if it's a nutrition class, they're there to help everybody. So it does benefit, you know, the entire district or department.
And don't absolutely do not forget about your workers' comp carrier, because I know that personally, a department that I have contracted with paid for a good portion of my contract, my initial contract, through their workers' comp carrier. So never forget about that. That's a great, a really great suggestion. So before we start wrapping up, Andy, we've heard about some of your great successes. We didn't even get to your wonderful, beautiful Sorinex racks, but they have gorgeous Sorinex racks here. But I want to have you kind of go through a few of your trip hazards, if there were any, kind of where you slammed your tail in the door or fell flat on your face, you know, just so that we can maybe help prevent that for someone that might be listening.
The biggest thing I think that we've really struggled with is just getting everybody on the same page across all three shifts. That is something that I think probably every department struggles with from time to time. Mm-hmm. And really, again, it's the message that you want to send in that constant communication. We have, and I'll talk about our movement initiative we did this year, you know, is a great example of it. We started this off and we said, you know, this is what we're doing. This is the time we're setting aside for it. This is how it's going to go. And we have our three battalion chiefs that are running the shifts, and one battalion chief shows up every morning in his workout gear, has his morning meetings in his workout gear. And just that alone has set the tone for that shift. And they are awesome.
It's a huge message.
It is. They come in, they do the movement stuff. They go on to work out afterwards, and then they start drill at 9 o'clock. Where the other two shifts, not saying that, you know, the battalion chiefs are against the program, I just don't think that maybe they're 100% sold on the program, and, you know, they have their priorities that they want to get done for the day. And, you know, that's their job as the battalion chief to run the shift how they want to. So those other two shifts aren't as compliant in it. I'm not going to say that they're not doing it or intentionally, you know, harming the program by any means, but just that one simple little act of showing up in your workout gear in the morning from that one battalion chief really just sets the tone for the day. And they've been very successful for doing that. So that's one thing, is just having that leadership and really pushing that message. Is again, I can't stress that enough. Some of the other stuff that we've had issues with, and this one's on me, is when we do fitness assessments, getting them all done, documented, and recorded in a timely manner, and then meeting with the individuals. I'm not always the one doing them. We have three other peer fitness trainers. So by the time I get the information back, I get it. Everybody's got their own spreadsheet with all their information from every fitness assessment, every consumption test that they've done. So by the time I get it back, get it entered, and then we get back out to discuss this with the individuals, some time could have gone by just with the amount of work it takes to get all the data entry done and everything. So that's something that I'm currently working on, trying to have other people assist with, instead of just trying to do this all myself, because that is definitely one thing that you'll find when starting a program is if you really don't delegate and have other people help you, it is very task oriented, and there's a lot of work that can go into it depending on how detailed you get with it. But
and if we're simply just adding that duty onto your on-duty time, which I know with you isn't the case. You do have time delegated off duty, but many departments are trying to do this on duty. It's nearly impossible.
Yeah. There's no way I could do it. And there is times where I am on duty and I'm sitting there just all day, just entering in data. And, you know, I'm neglecting something else. You know, for the past couple of years, I've had probationary firefighters. So there's just not enough time in the day between doing regular drill and then going out with the new guy and, you know, doing all his probationary stuff that he's got to get signed off on and all the other duties that we do. So it's a lot. So to be able to sit there all day and record fitness data just isn't going to happen on shift.
Not in the cards.
No,
absolutely not.
No.
Well, two final things. We'll at the very end, your chief and deputy chief have been super kind to allow us to share their contact information. So we'll end with that. But before we get to that, I'm actually here in Plainfield today for our first meeting of the Resiliency Committee, which I'm really excited about. This was formed at the convention this summer, the Associated Firefighters of Illinois Convention. And so Andy's hosting us here at Plainfield. But Andy, can you just go into a little bit of what the Resiliency Committee is, since you are a co-chair?
Yeah, again, I'm super excited. I was kind of disappointed we pushed this off till October 3rd, because I know when Joe Galley, he's our chair, sent out the dates, I was like, man, we could have this meeting next week. This is awesome. I can't wait. And then, of course, you know, in true fashion, trying to get 16 people together, we had
like
to push
herding
it out.
Cats.
It was. I was like, oh, I got to wait like a month and a half for this thing to happen. So it's been, very exciting to be not only a part of this committee, but, you know, thinking about all the ideas in the last month of different things that we could do. But the whole concept of the Resiliency Committee is how we can help the firefighters of Illinois basically bend and not break. So it's going to be something that, you know, we're going to look at coming up with programs and education topics and different things that we can help teach firefighters to help them get through their career without having any major, you know, issues, whether it's mental health or fitness or just, nutrition. I mean, all kinds of things, anything bad that you could possibly think of. We're going to try to help make it so that way, yeah, it's going to suck. I mean, we all have our low moments at times within our career, but here's how you can better yourself and get through it. So we've always been very good at, you know, the peer fitness program. We recognized back in the late 90s that there was a need for, you know, fitness and to prevent firefighter heart attacks was the main driver for it. And then we got into the mental health with the number of firefighter suicides and everything. We've done an awesome job of identifying the problem and then trying to figure out how to fix it once we have the problem identified. So now we want to try to prevent the problem. So, and I've heard it numerous times of this is going to be like fire prevention for the fire service. So
upstream, my favorite word.
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be really exciting. I can't wait for 10 o'clock.
Right. So we have like 58 minutes until the rest of the Resiliency Committee is storming the castle. All right, Andy, I'm so glad that we could sit down today. If there's someone that wants to reach out to you personally afterwards, is there a particular email or a contact you would like them to use?
Yeah, you can email my personal email, which is PFD, as in Plainfield Fire Department, medic21@gmail.com.
And I'll put that in the show notes for everybody as well. And then to contact your chiefs or your deputy, how about their contact information?
I won't give it out because I'll probably spell something wrong, but we'll put it in the show
notes. Okay, we'll put it in the show notes. That's a legit plan, Andy. Good job. All right. Anything that I didn't ask you that you were like, oh, I so wanted to talk about this?
Just speaking of the deputy chiefs and the fire chief, I do want to talk about them really quick because they have been just so supportive of all of this for all the years. Chief Stratton, when I first brought him the idea of us doing the fitness assessments ourselves, he was the deputy chief at the time. And everything that I ever brought to him, whether it was fitness, mental health, anything. He has been 100% supportive. He never questioned me on it. He never said no. He just nothing was like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's do this. So I can't it really a lot of it. The successes we've had have are because of him and his leadership and his support. In fact, I even remember there was a fire. I think it's the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. They were doing a class here and I had no idea about it. And he's like, hey, you need to take this class. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to learn about firefighter cancer. Turned out I became an instructor that day for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. So he's always looking for stuff. He's always finding stuff. And you know, he's just been super supportive. And then Deputy Chief Bonomo and Deputy Chief Reynolds, again, instrumental in the support. When I came up with the resiliency program, movement initiative. I worked with Deputy Chief Bonomo and Deputy Chief Reynolds, and they were like super on board for it. Again, never balked at anything and always were supportive of doing everything. So they are just awesome. I can't thank them enough. They even actually, cause when we do this, we have, the videos go off. We have the first arriving system. So they go off between 7:15 and 9 a.m. every morning. There's like a constant loop of me and the other peer fitness trainers doing all these exercises. And we even had all three chiefs have their own video demonstrating these. So they get to watch them.
I'm hearing that your chiefs are models.
They are. They are. They're models. So even the chief's dog, Daisy, she even got in on one.
That's amazing. Well, and just to wrap up and give Chief Stratton just a little bit more props, the very first time I ever presented here, I presented 6 sessions of the exact same lecture, and that man sat through 5 of them just to show support and show his employees that it was important. So, all right, Andy, I think that we can probably wrap up here. I appreciate you. This has been a great conversation. I think it's going to be very helpful for our firefighters out there. And this has been AZ and Andy, and we are